Hear Me Out is a podcast that welcomes everyone from all walks of life to listen to the show. We want everyone to be part of the conversation around marriage, relationships, and life. Having said that, the content you're about to hear does not include those relationships that struggle with domestic violence. It is important to seek professional help if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence. Please reach out to local authorities, shelters, or hotlines for support and assistance, some of which will be linked in the show notes for tonight's episode. Domestic violence is a serious issue that requires immediate attention and should never be taken lightly. This program contains strong language and discussion of topics that may be sensitive for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
I know the waters run deep, it's the secrets that they keep can't be sold. I see wisdom on the shoulders of the others and the things we've been told. Remember when life seemed so simple and every day was better than the last? I ask myself, how can it be so simple?
Well, here we are, Miss Natalie Wanner. Welcome to part one of this incredible journey that we're about to start together. How are you tonight?
I'm doing really well. I'm really excited to get started on our new journey together.
It's going to be fun. You know, I can't tell you how many people have asked me over the course of the last few weeks about this show. People around me are confused, they're excited, but nobody sort of knows what's going on. I've never developed anything under this much secrecy, but I wanted to do that on purpose because I think what we're going to do and what we're about to do is very special. So for our audience, I think it's important that we explain sort of how the show even happens, right? So for those listening, we sat down for an episode of Me and My Friends back in November of last year, I think. And we'll link that in the show notes tonight. And I knew probably 15 minutes into that conversation that this should be a podcast. I was frankly shocked that it hadn't been. You know, I came across you on Twitter and I was very much interested in the book, Crazy on the Inside, A Memoir of Nobody Special. We'll link that in the show notes as well tonight. But I started watching your shorts, the Hear Me Out series. And the more I watched, the more I kept asking myself really just one thing, like, why does she not have a podcast? So I reached out to you and I said, we should do a show. And surprisingly, you were very open to that. And so now I'll turn it over to you and you can basically tell everybody your side of that story that I just told.
Thank you, Chris. I really enjoyed that interview and you showcased me really well. It was funny because when you asked me about doing a podcast, I was like, well, I don't want to just be sitting here talking to myself. Mm-hmm. But having a co-host, yeah, let's really talk about relationships. Let's really talk about marriage. So for me, I'm 15, 20 years in to working with people in the community, all the way up to having my adventure in New York. And one thing I realized is that in life, in relationships and things like that, we kind of look through that keyhole. Mm-hmm. We look through the peephole of like, this is what we see and this is what we're dealing with. But that's such a small part of it. And people become fixated on it.
Yeah.
So what I decided to do was I want to open the entire door. No more looking through keyholes or peepholes. Let's open the entire door of marriage and show what the actual state of marriage is. Mm-hmm. Because what people think marriage is and how they think it functions and, you know, the success rates in that, it's all quite skewed. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at it, divorce rates only measure one thing: who made it to the end of the death pact and who didn't. It doesn't talk about if those people during that time together were happy and they just so happened to amicably evolve out together.
Yeah.
Marriage is supposed to be private. It doesn't have to be secret. Mm-hmm. But the more that I spoke to people, the more that people flooded into my DMs, into my life, whether it was at a airport bar or like into my DMs or whatever.
Yeah.
The more I knew what marriage looked like and how it functioned were no longer the same in so many marriages. Mm-hmm. People started to play for the audience of society. And I really believe that they didn't go back to their partner to decide what should be done together. Mm-hmm. So we have this one size fits all traditional marriage.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. a lot of people won't recognize your unity unless it falls within those confines.
That's right.
But there's so many people that are drowning within those confines because a one size fits all marriage. Well, that seems a bit much because mm-hmm. every marriage has two people. Let's say every marriage has two people. I know there's like polygamists and all that, but let's say every marriage has two people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
People were playing for the audience of society and they didn't really go to their partner to find out what they wanted. They use this one size fits all to say, this is the way it should look. So just stay mm-hmm. within these confines and we're good. Do not mm-hmm. move outside of those confines, though. And it didn't matter that their partners were struggling. It yeah. didn't matter that people were wondering if this was going to be enough. What mattered was that they look like a happy, married, monogamous couple. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It has to be monogamous.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Even though so many of them are filled with sexlessness, resentment, how it looks and how it functions aren't the same.
Yeah.
And that became really clear. So I got to thinking, why do we care so much about what society thinks about our marriage if our marriages are private?
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're supposed to be private. That's the problem. There's a lot of marriages that just simply aren't private. And I think if you could just remove that aspect of it, I think a lot of marriages would probably be able to focus within themselves and not have to worry about outside involvement, like family and friends and society in general, just to cast a wider net, really. But I mean, yeah, it's what is okay with society standards and what is okay with your friend standards and your family standards, even more so. So yeah, that can put a lot of stress on any couple, but it's a matter of, can you break free from that and really focus on, you know, your marriage, yourself, your life, because that person is who you spend the rest of your life with. It's not anyone else. It's not any of those people, you know? And I think,
right.
We just get into our own heads. We let our family influence us. We let our friends influence us too much. And a lot of the decisions we make aren't pure because of that.
Well, I wonder how many marriages have been completely strained and ripped apart just by keeping up with the Joneses.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
When we look at marriages as a one size fits all, I think that's where it starts to deteriorate because it's mm-hmm. really difficult for two people to decide their marriage and future by the rules of people before them. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying throw out all traditional marriage. I would not say that. There are so many good things about traditional marriage that makes
yeah,
sense,
absolutely.
Right? There really are. But what I am saying is this. I believe that each marriage or relationship has a unique formula. I do not believe in a one-size-fits-all relationship, specifically when it comes to marriage and a lifelong partnership with mm-hmm. kids and careers and houses and assets and the potential for even divorce.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that a one-size-fits-all is a good program. I think it would be extraordinarily difficult to thrive and be happy in somebody else's rules for how you should live your life.
Yeah.
I also believe that so many fall into that because the people before them did, their parents or whatever, and this is the way it is. So just kind of like suck it up and mm-hmm. just do it. But here's the thing. There are so many brilliant, beautiful marriages and long-term relationships that you could just like hoist up and like show as an incredible example.
Yeah.
Because I believe those two people trusted each other, trusted the relationship, and found the formula that works for them. Now, yeah. do we know the formula? No, because those people keep their marriage and relationship private. They don't play for any other audience than their family. What you see is what you get. That's mm-hmm. it. They do not air everything out. They don't do those things.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this. You will not find those people on my platforms or in any of my threads because they're too busy enjoying life and getting on with it. And that yeah. is the God's honest truth. It just yeah. is. People yeah. are happy in life and that it's because they found their formula. They found what works for them. They showed up to their table of marriage. They advocated for themselves in a way that was respectful and heard, and their partner met them halfway. And together they were able to compromise because marriage is about compromise, but it should not. Be solely about sacrifice. When I look at healthy marriages, when I look at two people who are like, we love being together, this is what we're doing, their formula, when you look at it, looks pretty modest how you would think it would. But how it functions, how it really runs behind closed doors, you you probably don't know their formula because it might not work for you. It's not your business. Like,
yeah,
the formula that works for me and Dan isn't going to work for everyone. I'm not out here pumping open marriages.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out here saying, hey, advocate for yourself. What do you want? Life can be a very long time. And when you're sharing that with someone, mm-hmm. it can feel even longer.
Absolutely.
How do we stop resentment from moving in and taking hold? How do we stop confusion? Mm-hmm. How do we make people feel like they matter? They're still alive. You know what I mean? Excitement, yeah. And things like that. It's hard to do that when you're, yeah, playing by somebody else's pattern that you don't necessarily enjoy.
Yeah, that's a really powerful point you make there. I think, you know, a lot of people would look at this and, you know, let me just get out in front of this and say this out front here. This is not a sex podcast. So for people that are listening to this that are thinking this is going to be a sex podcast, it's not. This is not a lifestyle show. We are a show that's about communication. When I hear the term open marriage, it's really just because, you know, since I've met you especially, and we've had, you know, conversations off the record, of course, and gotten to know each other, and you really changed the way I view what an open marriage is. I always thought open marriage was just two people that just didn't really have any rules within the marriage. What I didn't really realize is open marriage is really about exploding your communication. It's like rocking your marriage to its core and changing the way you communicate forever. It's like taking a love you have for your partner, and it's like breaking through a plateau and getting over to something else. That's just, it's something else entirely. I can't really explain it, but going through it, it's a really amazing experience. I mean, I think what you do, I think it's very special because I think you save relationships. You're in the business of saving relationships. That's what this show, I hope, will do. It will inspire couples to really sit down and get honest with themselves and with each other so they can communicate on a different level and look at their marriage or their relationship in a brand new way. That's what I want for this show. And that's what I think you're doing.
Through my adventures, through all my things, like I initially got a degree in philosophy.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to law school. I did. I wanted to go to law school. That's where I was headed. It had been my dream since I could walk. I was going to go to law school. So I excelled in philosophy. I'm going to do this as my undergrad and go. As I went through the years, I really learned how to think completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I really learned to dissect my thoughts and actions and to really understand how I wanted my life to go. It also, just so you know, helped me break down old patterns and formulas that were given to me through life and devise my own set of morals and beliefs for myself. As I was going through and I was really excelling at philosophy and I really, really enjoyed it, when I graduated, I worked in the criminal justice sector. So I was working with those that were impacted by crime, as well as a lot within the community. So I worked with our high-risk youth. I worked with our homeless population. And I facilitated anger management to mandated clients for around a decade. A large part of that is communication, laying boundaries, identifying triggers, things like that.
Yeah.
I learned that so many people have absolutely no idea how to advocate for themselves. They don't understand actual communication. And people might laugh at this, but part of communication is listening. And a lot of people only listen so they can rebuttal, not to actually hear the person. A lot of conversation or communication is comprehension. It won't really matter if you don't understand what I'm saying.
Damn.
And then people don't like confrontation. They don't like dealing with the triggers. They don't want to rock the boat. They're not really sure how people are going to react.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to just let it go. Let sleeping dogs lie. I was really shocked at this, like to just be kind of dormant in life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized there's no way I'm going to law school. There's just no way. It's a waste for me. I don't want to stand there and decide how many years someone's going to get. Things like that. I don't want to be standing there spending time negotiating somebody's years when I can be like, wait a minute. I actually like working in the community. I like working hands-on with people and I like empowering people. Yeah. I really like helping them find their voice again.
Mm-hmm.
So years later, my husband and I decide we're going to open our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I start going to New York 1 week a month. While I'm there in my adventures, it was really clear to see that people are completely disconnected and lost in their lives and marriages or relationships. It was unreal. When I would meet people, they would strictly talk about how they got to be single, what their marriage was like, what it was like to be in those circumstances. I wasn't a date. I became a therapist. I'm not a therapist, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, really, I get it.
Wanted
I get
that.
It. Yeah.
Right? It was like these people bought into this idea of marriage, the effortless marriage. I'm going to find my soulmate and I will be complete. And everything will be shiny and sparkly from here on out.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't deliver, because marriage is absolutely not effortless by any stretch of the imagination. And when you find a couple and you're like, well, they do it effortless, they have absolute immaculate communication as well as top tier respect and a very safe space to communicate. That's a huge difference.
One more time for the people in the back, rewind that shit, because that's really important. Look, it's not that hard. Once you get to a certain point within your marriage, within your relationship, where you can talk about anything and you can share anything and you can feel anything, because it's okay to feel, it's okay to be yourself. You have self-identified qualities within that marriage. You know, you have your own identity. It's a very different place. And I feel like marriages can get there. I know people that are there, but like you said, they all have specific things in common, and communication, crystal clear, transparent communication is right at the top of the list of that. But that takes work. And people do, I think, step into marriage with a false narrative, because we've built this false narrative over so many years and decades and generations, really, frankly. Now we've got this misunderstanding of what marriage actually is or what it can be. And what it can be for you and Dan is not what it is for me and Vanessa, is not what it is for the couple next to us, is not what it is for the couple next to them. Sorry, I'm rambling, but go
marriage,
for it.
No, you're good. Marriage isn't just a checklist of like what the church tells you it should be, or like
right.
what your parents tell you it should be.
Right.
A marriage is between two people, and they decide together what that's going to look like, because they're the only two that are in the marriage. I get that your parents want you to do this. I get that your friends want you to do this. But here's the deal. That's between you and your spouse. And you actually don't need a group project. But here's another thing. If you're struggling to find that formula, go to somebody who has no stake in your marriage, who doesn't care either way, who just wants to look at it and lay it out for you. Some might need a therapist, some might need a coach, just depending. But you don't have to go by this one size fits all. And many don't thrive in it. They just don't. Do you know, I could probably count on one hand, out of all the people I've spoken to, tens of thousands of couples, one hand, those who have spoken quite in depth about sex before the marriage as well as during the marriage, which is wild to me.
It is wild. That's a hell of a stat.
Right? Because it's like, how does sex go from a way to show love and affection to your partner? And that's how we bond and come together and that, right? Years down the line, life happens, stuff happens. And, you know, some shut them out because they can't be bothered. Others want porn or whatever.
Yeah.
So this effortless one size fits all that was promised, once you find your soulmate and everything's going to be amazing, these people are all showing up going, why isn't that happening? Well, because there's no such thing as an effortless marriage that is healthy and beautiful and strong. That doesn't exist. And if you're playing by other people's rules, you might find it really difficult to be happy in that. Specifically, let's say if, I don't know, you don't want or enjoy monogamy.
Well, I think, you know, the most staggering thing, well, there's a lot of staggering things really that I've learned since you and I have started talking, and we've started been in research for this show and kind of launching it. But one of the most staggering things that I think is, I don't know, just blows my mind, is that people aren't having those sex conversations when you're dating and when you're courting. Like, that's, you know, to me, that just really blows my mind, because sex is such a big point of contention in so many marriages, right? Obviously, it's such a big, big deal. It's the glue that holds marriages together in a lot of ways. It's such an important part of everything. And the fact that they're not talking about it as deeply as they should be is, you know, the mind reels when you hear something like that. When I hear you say that, it's almost like it's not believable, but I know it's true. And that's the sad part about it. It's a very ridiculous problem to have. And it's a very resolvable problem.
Here's the thing. For whatever reason, sex is talked about in the sense that if you cheat on me, it's done. You're not allowed to be with anyone else, yada, yada, yada. But what if I kept the conversation going and said, okay, I can understand that. I don't want you to cheat either. We're going to be monogamous. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the longevity of sex. Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the next 40 years into the future and what sex will look like. Now, I can understand life is going to happen. I can understand stress is going to happen. I can understand a lot of things might happen, even health. But here's where you're going to lose me every time. When the answer is, I just don't want to anymore. Because once you give up, to me, and this is just my opinion, monogamy is no longer important. Mm-hmm. So can we evolve the relationship?
Yeah.
Because if sex is important and monogamy is important, do we have to maintain that?
Yeah.
Listen, the only person my husband can stop me from having sex with is himself. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. If he wants out, no problem. I won't beg for it. I won't shame anyone for it. It's no problem.
Yeah.
Have at it. That's not my sex. That's yours. You have every right to choose your sex. Just like I do. I would never force you to have sex with me, and you will never force me into celibacy. That's not the way it works. Nope. And one person deciding all the sex and the value of the sex breaks the agreement.
Yeah, because it gives one person all the cards. And that is not something you ideally want to have in a relationship and in a marriage, especially with something as big as sex and as big as, there's a lot of different components, you know, that you can add that to, but sex is a big one. What do you think is the chief reason behind couples not having those conversations? I'm talking pre-marriage. Why is that such a problem? Why do you think that is such an issue? Why aren't these conversations being had? I mean, is the answer simple when you get down to it? Or is it really like, I don't know, is it one of those taboo things? Is it more complex than that?
In my opinion, I think we've attached so much shame and embarrassment, as well as love and affection, to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it evolves through the marriage or relationship. But how does it evolve?
Yeah.
Why is it turning from one straight to the other? And all I can think of is, people don't talk about it beforehand, whether they're embarrassed, they don't feel they have to because it's monogamous. They have like those rose-colored glasses of, we're going to be in love forever. We're going to do this forever. We don't have to talk about it. Just don't cheat.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone will stand there and say, don't you cheat or it's over. But I have yet to see someone stand there and go, if you cut me off sex and use it as a weapon, I will absolutely vacate this marriage in a beat.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn to porn and shut me out, I'm walking out.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to cheating, that's a hard line. When it comes to being forced into celibacy, well, it's a little different because as you're forced into it, it's kind of like, is your silence compliance? Whereas when you get caught cheating, it's kind of like execution stuff. It's so fast.
Yeah.
You can't even think. It's not like a slow ride into celibacy. It's like, boom, your marriage just changed instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody added somebody or broke the promise one way or another. Now, going into celibacy, same thing. You're breaking the promise. Mm-hmm. You're just using your value, shaming your partner, and going into sexlessness over time, maybe years or whatever. It's slow kill. That's it. It's the slow kill.
And then that's why so many couples become really excellent roommates. Some not so good roommates even. But that's what happens, is because the sex goes out the window. Of course, the intimacy goes out the window with it. I mean, obviously, look, if you're in a marriage and you're listening to this, you understand, I hope you understand how difficult marriage actually is. And it's not a play on marriage in a negative way. I love my marriage. My marriage is my favorite thing in my entire world. But I will tell you that it takes a lot of work to maintain that marriage. It takes a lot of effort, takes a lot of time, takes a lot of energy. You know, I was always taught that anything good, anything worth anything, actually does take a lot of time and effort and energy, but it can be joyful and full of a lot of wonderful things too. And I just think you have to get to a certain point in your marriage where, you know, sometimes it comes with time, right? Sometimes it takes 10 years to get there, you know, but if you're really committed to each other and you really want to be there, marriage gets better and better and better the more and more you communicate. I'm just such a believer in that. I'm a natural communicator. I love to do that. I mean, I talk for a living on, you know, podcasts and everything. That's what I do. You know, luckily I found somebody who is a good communicator, who will work with me and will handle my bullshit and go through my process with me. But that's what it's about, right? Those conversations should be happening. And it just appalls me that they're not. I can't fathom that.
I want to be very clear about something. I learned to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to be a good partner. I learned how to be a good person. Because this is my second marriage, not my first.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not here to like blow snow up anyone. Like I was not a good partner. I was not a good wife in my first marriage. I can tell you I was too young. I can tell you I was immature. I could tell you I didn't know what I was getting into. I can tell you a lot of things. But what I'm going to tell you is that I was not a good partner.
Mm-hmm.
I had an affair. I did things I'm not proud of.
Yeah.
And then I looked at myself. I looked at my partner and I made the changes. Because here's the deal. That's a partnership forever.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't tell him, I steal his ears.
That's right.
What does that say about my character? I'm allowed to learn. I'm allowed to grow. I'm allowed to do better. We're all allowed to do those things.
Yeah.
But I can't do those things unless I'm honest with myself and accountable. And I have to be those things. Because if I'm not, well, now I'm just lying to myself.
Yeah.
I hurt somebody who genuinely loved and cared for me. I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took a long look in the mirror and a long look at my life. And I decided that's not who I am. And that is not what I am about. And I did everything I could to change it. Everything I could.
Mm-hmm.
Before we were ever engaged, me and Dan, who have been together now for over 18 years married.
Yeah.
I told him, I don't know if I can be monogamous forever, but I can be committed to you forever.
Mm.
He had said, he goes, I think a lot of people feel that way. He goes, we'll cross the bridge when we come to it. And when we did, we just opened.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned so much from getting married at 18 and having a child at 19, you know, and not really having any life experience and just banking on somebody else. I was like, this isn't life. This isn't good.
Yeah.
I'm hurting somebody. I'm dragging someone along. That's not okay, because that is a reflection of my character. That's what I bring to the table. I got to change what I bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
I am not speaking from a soapbox of like, you know, you do da da da. What I'm saying is that we're all human. I get it. We make mistakes. I totally understand that. You're allowed to have redemption, but start.
Yeah. Well, fuck. All right. I need to drink more than you do. All right. Yeah. It's let's get into some stats, because I know you have an interesting take on stats, but I did want to go through some for you, and I wanted to just throw some out to our listening audience, and then I'm going to go ahead and give you a shot at talking about some of these stats, and then I'll give you the floor to talk about your thoughts on them in general. So this is from couplesacademy.org. It's one of the many websites I've been going over in the last several months. This is in pertaining to admitting to cheating, infidelity. According to research, the average American tells a falsehood 1 to 2 times each day. In fact, one study discovered that 60% of participants couldn't even go 10 minutes without telling a lie. Thoughts on that?
10 minutes without telling a lie. And what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on when integrity is just tossed?
Mm-hmm.
You can't be honest for 10 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
The fuck?
60%.
That's unreal.
It's a big number.
Do they know that they're being dishonest? Like, I know some people lie so much they believe it themselves, but it's like, what the hell? But it makes sense, because if you're cheating, you're going to need to keep that lie going.
Well, speaking of cheating, 13% of married women and 20% of married males have cheated on their partners. Does that seem low to you? Does that seem high to you? I know you're in the trenches.
Well, this number is basically who reported.
Right. That's very true.
The numbers are ridiculously low. Yeah.
I think they're, and that should scare you. If you're listening to this, that should shock you, that these numbers, you know, to me, I'm looking at 20% of married males, and, you know, that's kind of high. But for Natalie to say that those numbers are actually kind of low, that's scary when you think about that. Now, of those people, 76% are admitting their past infidelities to new partners. 24% are hiding them from new partners. So I thought that was interesting too. Only 73% of those who acknowledged kissing someone else did so openly. People were more forthright about having sex with someone else than kissing someone else. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, everybody remembers Pretty Woman. We don't kiss.
Yeah.
You can power till the fucking sun comes out, but we don't kiss. Kissing's romantic. So that doesn't shock me at all. But this is what we've come to. This is what we've come to. We've absolutely placed limits on love. Yeah. This is what it's come to. Yeah, I've had sex with multiple people, but I've only kissed three. Like, what?
Yeah. Okay, let's keep going. 69% of marriages break up as a result of an affair being discovered. So 69% of marriages, so damn near 70% break up because of a result of an infidelity, which is a big number.
It is. But here's the thing. How many found out about the affair and decided, you know what? Don't ask, don't tell. If I don't know, I don't care. I want the ignorance of bliss because I love the life I live or the benefits I get or whatever.
Sure.
I do not think that for everyone, cheating is a deal breaker or non-monogamy or any of that. I think it is a nice facade to put out there that I will not tolerate it. Mm-hmm. But many just don't want to know about it.
That's very true. Well, this is a good one. And I want to get your thoughts on this one. Because we're talking about the state of marriage tonight to open this series that we're doing together. And this is one I think kind of speaks volumes. Statistics show that 56% of men and 34% of women who commit infidelity rate their marriages as happy or very happy. This makes the reason people cheat, of course, a lot harder to dissect and comprehend. Thoughts on that? They're rating their marriage as either happy or in some cases very happy, but yet they're still cheating.
Yes. In my experience, and I can only talk from that, and that's all I'm going to do, is that a lot of people really love their partners lots. They do. They love everything about their lives and their marriages, except for the sex.
Yeah.
They don't match up well in sex. And a lot of times that might happen because perhaps somebody brings in trauma from before or whatever. They are not talking honestly and openly at the beginning of like what they like and desires. If your partner comes off as like closed off sexually in that, and you have hard kinks, you're probably not going to feel comfortable talking to them about that, which leads to more issues because you can't even talk to your partner about the sex you want. If sex is a part of your marriage or relationship, even if you're asexual, you discuss it.
Yeah.
How are you not discussing what you like for sex with your partner that's going to be with you forever and you've committed to a monogamy?
Yeah.
How does a marriage work if there's no safe arena to speak and be heard and not judged? If sex is used to tell me you love me and then it's used to shame me because of something I like, how's that gonna work? I would give it up, but other people might not necessarily want to give up their homes and children and yada 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 because they like a certain style or kink or whatever, but they don't talk to their partner about it because, well, they feel ashamed. They don't feel safe talking about it. They don't think they're going to get what they want. They think they're going to be made fun of. And on top of that, it makes them feel not so good.
Yeah.
So why even broach the topic when they already know they're going to be shamed for it, or they feel like they will based on their partner's prior conversations, comments, or whatever regarding sex or around that type of sex? Like, I've helped people come out to their partners after 20 years because they were bi. And you know what? Their partners, when they opened up, I mean, I've witnessed it three times, and their partners worked with them. They talked, they, you know, they went to therapy, they did things together, right? They really worked on it. But the biggest part of that was that the other partner felt, why don't you feel that you can tell me that? They had this fear in them because of the standard marriage, right? They didn't feel safe in their own sex. What if we'd end a sex? I know we're not a sex show. We're not going to become a sex show. We're not.
But it's important to discuss. It's the elephant in the room. You have to discuss it. So
it's hard for me to believe we haven't done such absolute serious damage to sex across the board.
Agreed.
I'm watching it in marriages. I'm watching it. People love their partners. They love the marriage they built, the partnership, the family, the future, everything. But the sex doesn't line up. It just doesn't. So for me, if you ask me why 56% of men and 34% of women have had extramarital affairs, even though they say they are happy or very happy, it's because they are just not in that one department. And it's funny that that one department all of a sudden is like used and negotiable and all of these things. You know, it's funny. On my threads, a lot of people who go into sexist, they're like, sex isn't a big deal. You know, it's not the end of the world. Who cares? If all you want is sex, then what's wrong with you? This guy came on. It was on Twitter. Honestly, I use it all the time now. And he said, listen, a washroom isn't the most important room in the house, but I'm not fucking buying a house without one.
Yeah.
And I mean, he ain't wrong because neither am I. And yeah, that washroom better fucking work for the duration that I have that house, because that's mm-hmm. what I've signed on for.
Yeah.
And unless my partner cannot have sex
mm-hmm.
or there's something going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me rattle off some numbers for you that I think are pretty staggering. And then we'll give you the floor to talk about your view on stats in general. Here we go. 2% of children are the result of affairs. 3% marry the lovers they had the affair with. 50 to 60% of married men engage in extramarital sex at some time during their relationships. 80% of people become addicted to online affairs. 75% of divorces in which cheating is a factor. 25% of affairs lasting less than a week. 98% of men have frequent fantasies about someone other than their partner. But it's not just men. 80% of women do it too. 65% of affairs ended within the first 6 months, and 57% of people have used the internet to flirt. That is the state of marriage as we know it right now in this moment. So is there an epidemic? Absolutely, there is. There is a breakdown in communication. There is a breakdown in the way we talk to each other, in the way we respect each other as people. Integrity has broken down. And yes, there are some marriages out there that are kicking some serious ass and doing it right. But as Natalie mentioned, they're only doing that because they have these specific key values in place and they have a specific code that works for that marriage. And they're keeping everybody else out of it. And I think that's one of those links to successful marriages in general. And I think you're spelling it out tonight. And I think we're hopefully giving people an idea of where marriage is at and where sex within marriage is at, which is obviously the number one reason why people cheat.
Do you know what the number one reason why people get divorced?
What?
It's actually not cheating. It's lack of commitment, which I picked right out of the hat just based on my experience and talking and things like that. That's another thing I've noticed is that the commitment is basically the bare minimum of till death.
Mm-hmm.
That's the level of commitment we're working with.
Yeah, bare minimum. And the goal is to want to do more than the bare minimum. The goal is to love your partner enough to want to participate in the marriage and to be present in the marriage. And, you know, I go through that all the time with my wife. We are actively present in each other's lives. We do the work. And I think, you know, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you. You talked about marriage not being easy. Why do you think so many people are afraid of doing the real work that it takes to make their marriages great, to make their marriages joyful? I mean, why are we running from that work?
Because if it doesn't look like the standard, then you have all these people who don't belong in your marriage telling you it's not a real marriage. You don't really love each other. That's not the way it goes. You're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say this. If you need everyone's life and marriage to look like yours so that you feel better and comfortable, I got some real bad news for you. Not only are you not comfortable, you're not even confident in your relationship. You adjust. We're all doing just fine.
Let me just ask you this point blank. Well, I think I know the answer to this. We've broken sex, correct? Sex is broken.
In my opinion, sex is absolutely fucking smashed.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it. That's the way it is. If you tell me, I love you so much, and we have sex constantly, and we have this passion, and we have all of that, and we keep going, and yada, yada, yada. And then one day I come to you, and I'm like, hey, Chris, we haven't like touched for like ever. And you're like, Jesus, Natalie, is that all you think about? What is wrong with you? What about other things? Well, okay, but like, that's how we always shared. And like, you know, that's how we bonded. That's something that we used to show our love and affection. And mm-hmm. now when I want it, I feel bad. I feel ashamed. I'm afraid to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. how did we not break it? When you're afraid to talk to your partner about sex because they've completely stolen your voice and cut you out of all choices, the marriage is fucking broken.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer balanced. You've stolen your partner's voice and told them, fuck off. I don't need it. And what mm-hmm. are you going to do about it? Nothing. Because here's the deal. If you leave, I can't believe you broke your marriage for sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. that is absolutely fucking unreal to me because I didn't agree to a sexless marriage and I didn't fucking sign up for one. So unless my partner is sick and can no longer have sex, there is no sexless marriage. And there is no way someone is stealing my voice and dragging my years along for their comfort. Too bad. It is your job to make sure your mental, physical, and sexual health is all on point. That's what we agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
So if monogamy is important to you and you are healthy enough and you work with your doctors and you maintain that and you pour into our marriage, there's no issue.
Yeah.
But to force sexlessness onto somebody because you no longer value it and you think they shouldn't either, I don't understand how that's not running away with the marriage and telling your partner you actually don't care what they think or want. And you don't even care about their mental health.
Yeah.
When someone does that, when they cut their partner out and then they do not give any type of conversation, no answers, no nothing, all that moves in is confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And then that turns into resentment.
Mm-hmm.
Once resentment hits, well, a coach can't do much for you.
Yeah.
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 You got to head to therapy.
Right.
And truth be told, most people have to spin through therapy before they sit at my table with me. I'm a coach. Yeah. I'm not a therapist.
Talk about that a little bit more. I think that's interesting. Tell me the why behind that decision. Because you don't have to do that, but you prefer that people go into therapy before they come to you. Can you explain that process? And can you explain kind of why Absolutely. You prefer that route?
It's a preferred route because many marriages or relationships need hard intervention. If mm-hmm. your relationship is riddled with infidelities, you need a therapist to help you go through that and understand what's going on. If you cut sex out or you're struggling in sex and that with your partner because of trauma or anything like that, that's therapy. That's mm-hmm. not a coach. Me as a coach, this is me. You want to go from A to B. Okay. You're going to show up with all your truth and everything. We're going to talk. I'm going to formulate your marriage formula for you to get to B. And together, we're going to go. I have two players and I'm the coach. I'm going to show them how to get from here to there. But they're already here, ready to go. I'm not trained to go back in time and be like, so what happened there? Like, I'm not a therapist. I'm not trained in therapy. Now, you know, I worked in the community. I worked with mental health for over 10 years. I can probably spot it really well. Still not a therapist. I don't play trickle-down therapy. I don't do any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
If your marriage has infidelity, if it has trauma, if it has domestic violence,
yeah,
you cannot sit at my table until you go to therapy.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. And people will be like, therapy is garbage. Therapy is this. Therapy is that. Therapy quite literally gives you the keys you need to get over your own bullshit. If you work therapy, therapy works. I don't know what else to say. I've been to therapy. My husband, yep. Children, you bet. Therapy just provides you with answers. If you go in and you lay it out, they're going to walk you through and you are going to find keys to yourself and your behaviors. And you're going to have all these answers that help you become mm-hmm. a better version of yourself. It's going to give you understanding. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to do that. Now, therapists and counselors can coach, but unless a coach has a degree in being a therapist or a counselor, it does not go both ways. Mm-hmm. I can only go back so far as to say, okay, you had some major accomplishments here. How did we get that?
Mm-hmm.
But I am not going into your psyche. I am not going to start asking you about your childhood and things. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. And if you come to my table and we talk, the first thing I do is vet. I vet out who I can help and who I can't. For example,
yeah.
I facilitated anger management for 10 years. Do you know how many parole officers I had to tell their clients who are charged with domestic violence are not a fit for this program?
Yeah.
Because domestic violence isn't about anger management. It's about power and control.
Yeah.
So they don't fit in there. I have to vet them out. They need a therapist, not just a program. Mm-hmm. They need actual intervention.
Mm-hmm.
They need real understanding of what is going on and why that is. They need the proper supports around them so that they can move through appropriately and effectively.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that I worked in the community for 10 years with high risk or, you know, mental health or anything. It doesn't matter. I'm still not educated or trained enough to do that. And I will not ever breach
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You come to me, it's because you're at A and want to get to B, and I'm going to get you there. I make marriage formulas. I don't believe in a one size fits all, not even a little bit. Just to touch on stats back there for a minute, I just want to say something. I'll do videos on sexless marriages and I'll just get a plethora of men coming in going, you know, it's women this, it's mostly women, things like that.
I'm
and
sure.
I don't play the blame game because everyone's invited to the blame game and it doesn't really do anything for anyone. Like
right.
if you tell me 92% of women cheat and 40 whatever percent of men do whatever. I still want to hear those 8% of women who don't cheat. Mm-hmm. Like everyone still gets a voice. I personally don't care about stats because I'm not a professor and or a statistician. I'm not a therapist who's like, okay, well, most women cheat or most men cheat because of this. I actually don't care about stats at all. And here's why. When I did facilitate anger management, there was a part in the program that just briefly talked about domestic violence and actually why it didn't belong in the program.
Yeah.
Now, as I was explaining it, I had said to the people in my anger management program, which by the way is predominantly men, over 10 years, there was probably a couple dozen women. So we're in there and I said, wow. Hey, this is just semantics of he, she. I'm aware, we're all aware that men are impacted by domestic violence as well. Mm-hmm. As we get going, this one guy, he just gets really angry at the semantics. And he goes, Natalie, I don't like this. It sounds like men are only the perpetrators and that's not the truth. And I said, I can totally understand that. Now I know where he's going with this and I am completely on board and we are going to walk through together and I am going to show him. I said, okay. Right now, I have 15 men in my class. Let's just take 5 of you. Out of 5 of you, how many of you have experienced domestic violence? Mm-hmm. Out of the 5, 2 put their hands up. I said, okay. Out of the 2 of you, how many of you told a counselor, a therapist, police officers, a lawyer, a family member? Who was the next person you told? Me. I was the next person. And I said, okay, I see you. I know you exist. But here's the thing. How the fuck am I going to make programs? How am I going to raise awareness if you won't raise your hand? So what's stopping you from raising your hand, right?
Yeah.
Well, how do you go and say, this girl who's 4'9" beat me up?
Yeah.
I was like, well, who's stopping you from doing that? Why don't you tell your friends? So I don't play the stats game because I know there are so many people out there who will never say a word, but it doesn't mean they aren't valid. Mm-hmm. They are absolutely valid. So I don't care if most women do this or most men do that or whatever they want to do. I'm a coach. I want to work with the people who are here and now. We're going to get forward. Mm-hmm. And when I do my videos, all I want to do is provoke thought.
Yeah.
A lot of my videos, if you relate to them, it's probably therapy and not me. Mm-hmm. But I want to provoke thought because so many just live on autopilot of this is the way life is. So it is what it is.
Yeah. No,
it doesn't have to be like that, though. Mm-hmm. You don't have to play for the audience. Like, it's funny. I always say, you don't have to do that. There's no gun to your head. But so many people let society be the gun to their head.
Yeah.
And they're afraid. And it's wild to me that fleeting opinions can mean so much to somebody. They don't even know these people over their own happiness. As if the opinions of others outside of my marriage mean more than the opinions of my marriage of me and my husband. Yeah. How is that a thing? Why are marriages playing for the comfort of others rather than the happiness of the two involved?
I don't know. That's a question that I am floored by. And another reason why I wanted to do this show with you is because that is one of the most common problems in all of marriage is keeping up with the Joneses. But from a relationship standpoint, these are people that are trying to be as good as the people around them and social media and all that stuff and everything they see online. And it's all a false narrative. It's a house of cards. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really interesting is that all of these people are sort of falling for the same house of cards. And I'm just baffled by that. I'm baffled that continues to happen. I don't know why people aren't snapping out of that and writing their own formula with the help of a coach or just sitting down and grinding things out together, being honest and saying, hey, you know, I like it when you do this. I like this sexual thing. I like this sexual thing. You know, just change the way you look at each other, change the way you empathize with each other. And I promise you, and this is something, again, I will only speak for myself, but I promise you, as someone who is going through it after being married for 10 years to the woman of my dreams, I can tell you that that shit is hard work. It's not easy to open your marriage in the sense of communication. We're not talking about opening your marriage sexually necessarily. There's other ways to open your marriage, and communication is where it has to start. It just has to start there. There's no other way around it. And I think what you're doing is really remarkable. You are saving people's marriages. And that must be something I know, but from talking to you offline, that is something you don't take lightly. That is a responsibility that you are very, very passionate about. Anybody who sits down with you for more than 5 minutes, that's very, it's just obvious.
People started to believe or fell into the effortless soulmate marriage, that it's just going to happen on its own. And then when it became work, they started to question the integrity of the marriage.
Yeah.
And when it becomes work, like constant talking and negotiating and compromising, a lot of people just check out, because it's like, I did not sign on to have to work at this relationship. I was told if I had a soulmate, this would all just fucking iron out. So why isn't it ironing out?
Right.
And, and people are actually shocked by it. They are. They're actually shocked by it. People have completely given up on their marriages. It is what it is. Doesn't really matter. You know, I'm this old. I don't care. Yada, yada, yada. It's like, if you can build a safe arena in your marriage to just talk, everything can change.
Imagine. But
predominantly, I talk to men because they always flood into my DMs. But also when I was dating, I was only dating men, right? Mm-hmm. And like, they have this idea of like, their partner can be happy, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work like that. Mm-mm. And I'm trying to explain to people, like, there's no way your partner is super happy in the same relationship you're drowning in, unless you are working overtime at trying to convince them that you are. Yeah. And when I brought this up to one of my clients, I said, hey, have you ever just gone to your partner and said, hey, everything I thought this was going to be, it's not. And he goes, oh God, no. He goes, I can't even imagine that, what that would be like. And I go, but is it so far-fetched that if you are struggling this hard, that they might be too, and that you're kind of hiding it and that so that they don't feel bad and they might be doing the same thing too. And he really thought about it for a bit. And after a bit, he comes back, a few days comes back, and he said, they had the conversation. And as he told her, he's like, you know, I don't know what it is, but I feel like we just cannot get ahead together. And like, I love you, but we're just constantly struggling and I don't know what to do anymore. And she just kind of just let all the air out. It was such a relief for her too, because she was struggling. She was absolutely struggling and not sure how they were going to get out of this. And they're both trying independently to not hurt the other's feelings and stay in this relationship that they're both struggling in and not talking, because when we talk, we hurt each other's feelings. And I was like, come on, you can have tact and compassion. Let's go.
Yeah.
So they figure out, we love each other. We have this amazing child. We have all these things. But together, for whatever reason, it's not working. Do you know what they do? They take a break. They do. He goes back with his family. She goes on vacation. They continue to talk. They try to work it out. But what they stopped doing was pretending.
Yeah.
Because marriage can be this incredible partnership that lasts your entire lifetime. And it can be this adventure where you both work together and get everything you have ever wanted. That's the fucking point of marriage. Good God. Get everything you want. Why are you not marrying your best friend? Why are you different with your friends than you are with your spouse?
Yeah.
What is going on? If you can't be who you are truly with your spouse, that's not a marriage. I don't care if you have the paperwork or not. You're being held in place. The other person has no idea. Yeah. And I think a lot of marriages are hostage situations. And when I say that, I want to be very clear. You and I do not discuss domestic violence and those impacted by it, because we're not therapists.
Yeah.
And because somebody that is involved in a relationship that has domestic violence can't say anything with their chest. And the one stat I do take seriously, no matter what, is that females who leave relationships that have domestic violence are more likely to be killed afterwards. They cannot just stand up and be like, peace, I'm out. I'm tired of this shit. They can't. So I do not speak about domestic violence here, because I am not here to empower you to stand up and walk out, because I know that that can be fatal. I leave that for the experts. They can guide you. I can help you find the proper supports, to put around you, but I'm not here to go through domestic violence because I am not educated or trained enough in that. That needs therapy. That needs hard intervention. Yeah. That's not coaching.
Absolutely. And, you know, we will have links to a lot of stuff that we're talking about tonight in the show notes. So, and we will have some, I'll ask Natalie to provide some links to some of her recommended contacts for that. And if you are interested in hearing more about specific topics, we will have an email set up. We will be giving out, we will have in the show notes, and you guys can email us at that, and we can maybe take some specific requests and some topics. And, you know, if something becomes overwhelmingly desired, that people want to hear us talk about something in particular, they want to hear Natalie sort of posit on certain things, I'll definitely pass that along to Natalie. And if you want specific experts on the show, maybe we can reach out to some folks. And Natalie, I know you certainly have recommendations for people that you'd want to bring on the show to cover certain topics. So we will be doing that during this 10-part series, which is going to represent season one of a show that will hopefully go on for a very long time. We certainly have no shortage of content. Natalie, you've been doing this for over a decade now. So I know you've got a lot of stuff that you want to talk about and a lot of things you want to get off your chest, and rightfully so, because you are dealing with a very interesting audience. And we will close out tonight. I've given you a lot of numbers tonight. Here is a set of stats that I want to talk to you about because they happen to be yours. And I think it's going to be really interesting for us to talk about that. You said something on the original conversation during Me and My Friends that really sort of rocked me. And I'm going to paraphrase what you said, but it was something along the lines of your fan base, your followers, your listeners now, after this episode drops, which I'm very excited to say, you have an audience that is very passionate. They definitely don't have, they don't shy away from telling you how they feel. They get into very heated, passionate discussions with you. But you said something during that initial episode that we covered, and it was that your listenership, your following is like an iceberg. What you see is nothing compared to what I have. And so I looked into that, and you are not kidding. You've done a lot of interesting work over the years, and you've coached a lot of people in some very interesting places. I want to just say that Natalie's engagement is about 700 times what is actually being shown on stats. So just so you know.
That.
Yeah. So just so you know, your engagement is really through the roof. People are watching you through your Hear Me Outs, through your shorts, across social media. So that iceberg that you referenced during Me and My Friends is actually probably a lot bigger than you ever imagined. And that is the final reason why I wanted to do this show, was because we have an audience out there that we need to represent. And that audience is who we've really been talking about tonight. People that are in relationships, that are married, that are in long-term relationships, that feel like they're stuck in communication breakdowns or in things that they seem, that seem really impossible or insurmountable to get out of. We want you to listen to this show. And as Natalie said, we're not trained therapists. Natalie is a relationship coach. She's a philosopher. She's got an amazing background. I think wholeheartedly, if you listen to the show, I believe if you're married or in a relationship of any kind, whether your marriage is really just kicking ass and doing amazing and firing on all cylinders, and if it is, God bless you, and I am so happy for you. But even those folks, I think, will get something out of what we're about to do with these next 10 parts of this season one show. So we aim to give our audience about 15 hours of content within season one of the show, and we will be talking about all kinds of things. We'll have some surprise experts, some really special guests maybe scattered throughout here. We'll do some really fun conceptual things. This is a show that is going to change the way you look at communication and even, dare I say, your own relationship forever. And that's really what we aim to do. Natalie, please continue.
We are going to evolve marriage, because if we don't, it's fucking doomed. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. One size fits all doesn't fit all. And that's just the way it is. If it did, divorce rates wouldn't be through the roof. People would be talking. Things would be thriving. But you know what's thriving? Ashley Madison. So it's time for a revolution. And yes. We welcome all.
I left out Miss Madison, Ashley Madison. I left out Ashley Madison because I think it's going to be a really interesting one-off conversation that you and I can have. Sort of the rise of Ashley Madison. I think that's really an interesting dichotomy there. Yeah, for sure. It's really interesting. And not just Ashley Madison. I mean, it sort of kicked down and kind of opened the floodgates for a lot of other services and a lot of other online stuff. And we're going to talk about really sort of the impact that the internet and social media has on marriages. You've got thoughts on that for sure. Yeah. So we're going to get into as much as we can, and we have lots of content coming your way. Look, I'm excited to do this with you. This is something that you and I have been talking about for, it seems like a long time offline. Tonight is a special night, and I'm just happy to be on this journey with you. And, you know, we are going to get into this. You know, we absolutely have an epidemic. There is something silently spreading through marriages all over this country, all over this world. You know, as I said at the beginning, at the top of the show, you are the only one that's really talking about this. And I think if you're, you know, screaming alone in a forest, you know, nobody's going to hear you, but you are making so much noise. It's impossible not to hear you. Now, because I believe in communication. Look, I'm doing it right now. I'm talking from not from a place of authority. I'm just talking from my place of personal experience to tell you that what Natalie is going to hit you with throughout these 10 segments that we're going to do. I mean, it's truth. It's gospel. It really is. Open yourselves. Listen to this. You're about to get a lesson that's really, really incredible. It's really going to be, you know, look, I look at this as a 10-part masterclass. That's what this is. This is a masterclass on relationships, and it's a masterclass on communication. And that's what I aim for. I want to impact marriages, period.
I want people to feel empowered to build the life and partnership they want, whatever that is for the two of them. It's not my business. It's not anyone else's business. I think what people need to realize is that your happiness in your life is far greater than just somebody else's comfort.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get over it.
Mm-hmm.
They will. They will absolutely get over it. It's an opinion.
Yeah.
That's it. The marriage you keep, that's your business. You cannot have an awful marriage, a strained home and marriage, and just a wonderful life outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it works. It's just not. A marriage is designed to be so big, it is in every corner. And if it's not in that corner, well, what are you doing in that corner that your marriage isn't allowed? Marriage is big. You can't ignore it. You can't put it on the back burner. You can't leave it full of confusion and resentment. And if you do, your life will absolutely reflect it. And there's a good chance your physical and mental health will show through.
This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to Hear Me Out, a married and single podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where you can interact with our hosts, hear bonus content, and follow each new conversation as it airs. That handle is Hear Me Out Talk. Reviews are crucial to the show. Please visit your favorite podcatcher to leave us your thoughts and review. It really does help get the word out. Your hosts for the show are Natalie Warner and Chris Williamson. The podcast is edited by Chris Williamson. Our show's opening and closing music is Don't Fail Me Now by Stella Fox. See you in 2 weeks. Ask myself, how can it be so simple? Will come tomorrow, another day has passed. I know still waters run deep. It's the secrets that they keep can't be sold. I see wisdom on the shoulders of the others and the things we've been told. Remember when life seemed so simple and every day myself, how can it be so simple? Well, come tomorrow, another day has passed. I see, I hear, I speak no evil. I'm just trying to do the best that I can.